Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. What do you do when you're poor and have a legal problem? In the Metro East, the most important call can be to the Land of Lincoln Legal Assistance Foundation in East St. Louis. It provides free civil legal services to eligible low-income residents and seniors in 65 counties in central and southern Illinois. After 43 years with that organization, its executive director, Lois Wood, has retired. This Harvard Law School graduate gained a national reputation for her work and advocacy, and she joins us in studio. Lois Wood, welcome. Nice to have you.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Are you getting used to sleeping in?
It's really nice. It's been a long time since I had time off in any reasonable amount. That's great.
A busy place over there, I take it. You service so many people in that large area that the foundation is involved with.
It is a very large area. It's really one of the challenges. 65 counties. We often say it's about the same size as the state of Indiana, which it is.
How large a staff is involved?
We have close to 100 people on staff most times, 55 attorneys, and the rest might be paralegals, interns, et cetera.
So. One of the things that jumped out at me in preparing for this program was the fact that you are a graduate of Harvard Law. Many Harvard Law graduates go off to the big corporations and make a lot of money. You chose a much, much different route. Why?
Well, I think I came to law school with the expectation that I would find a way to make a difference in people's lives. I had not really ever thought about being a lawyer. When I decided to go to law school, it was with the specific purpose of finding something that would be meaningful. That was the reason I was there. Harvard Law School wasn't a lot of fun, but that was the reason I endured. It was because I had that goal.
Are you from the East St. Louis or Metro East area?
No, I grew up on a farm in rural Nebraska.
How in the world did you wind up in the Metro East?
Okay, yeah, it was sort of a long story, but my husband and I were in Cambridge. He was doing a postdoc at Harvard. I was at Harvard Law School. And then came the time when we were both looking for jobs somewhere. And that was hard right then, especially with academic jobs. He's a scientist, and it wasn't a good time to be looking for jobs. So we looked hard to find a place where we could both do what we wanted to do, and that brought me to interviews here in the St. Louis area.
Did you anticipate when you came here and started there that you would be spending the next 43 years of your life doing that work?
You know, I think I expected that I would spend the next 43 years doing that kind of work, that I would stay at the very first place I started at, that I'm still on my first legal job. That's kind of a surprise to me. But
tell me something about the kind of work that is involved. You just deal with civil cases.
That's true.
You leave the criminal cases to the public defenders, I assume, right?
Right.
Tell me about that, the kinds of cases that you would be dealing with and the foundation would be dealing with.
Well, it's hard because we don't have nearly enough funding and staff to meet all the legal needs of low-income people and seniors whom we serve. There was a national survey that recently done by the Legal Services Corporation, I think, which identified correctly that probably one out of five low-income people that need legal help on an important legal problem actually seek out help. And of the one out of five who seeks the help, only half get full legal representation on their legal problem just because the demand is so much higher than the resources. So what our board does and what we do as staff is try to figure out, okay, what are our priorities? How do we decide which kinds of cases we will focus on and which we will just give advice for? The kinds of work we do have to do with family law, particularly domestic violence advocacy, housing. We do a lot of work for people at risk of homelessness. We do a lot of work on consumer issues, public benefit issues. Those are health issues, things that are most urgent for people. The needs of seniors are a little different than the needs of sort of the low-income part of the population we serve, though.
When you talk about only one in five actually surfacing to seek this help, That leaves 80% of the people who need help perhaps aren't getting it. What do they do?
Well, they suffer in many instances. They may try to do it themselves. And some people can be successful with pro se advocacy, that is, helping yourself in court or with your legal problem. There are a lot of pro se resources out there to help people. I would say that doesn't apply to the great majority of low-income mm-hmm. people. They may find themselves wrongfully evicted. They may find themselves victim of domestic violence with no idea of where to turn. They may find themselves being harassed for a consumer debt that they really don't owe. And they just may just be part of their life.
It's, in other words, it's normal, if that's the right word to use. It's a normal part of their
life,
day-to-day life.
Those kinds of issues they face become normal and extremely stressful to them.
They would have to find you, I assume, rather than the other way around.
For the most part, although we now have developed some ways of getting out in the community more and helping people find us, one of the most interesting ways we've discovered in recent years is the concept of the medical legal partnership. We partner with health organizations and hospitals. Sometimes they pay enough for us to have an attorney who works on problems that the medical staff identify as being harming to their clients. For example, if a pediatrician is helping a child with some kind of medical problem and identifies that there are environmental problems in their house that's worsening their health, for example, if they have asthma, if they're part of a medical legal partnership, it's the social worker or the nurse or even the doctor who says, "We have someone who can help you. This is the attorney who will help you with your case." So there are ways of reaching out and letting more people know that they can get help.
Well, that's certainly good and helpful to them, needless to say. I'm interested in the fact that you're still using the present tense. Now, you retired on July 31st, but it's kind of, after 43 years, it's kind of hard to shake the fact that you're not there anymore, I suppose.
It is, and it's a little harder because I am partly still there. I am helping out with the transition to the new executive director, so I'm still there a couple days a week just sort of sharing my knowledge of the organization and helping the transition go smoothly. But I have a feeling that even when that ends, I'll still be saying "we" and finding ways to try to help.
Well, yeah, it is difficult after all that time, as I suggested, to just totally back away.
Right.
What else would you do? I mean, you have a lot of years ahead of you. What else would you do?
Well, I have all the things I've been cramming into 2 days or one day weekends all these years. Gardening. My husband and I had a pick-your-own farm at one point, and we still have a lot of plants on our property. So there's that. I love reading. I love spending time with my family. I have a couple grandchildren, and I have 8 brothers and sisters. So there are things like that that I just want to spend more time with. I have realized, though, in the last few months that there will be other things, other ways I will find to help in the world. I am very concerned about health care, access to health care. I expect to be active in advocacy for the continuation of access to health care. And I may find my way to helping out a candidate along the way who believes in the same kinds of things I believe in.
I would gather that being political was probably something you would be difficult for you to do when you were executive director.
Right. You certainly couldn't run for any political office under the federal regulations that govern us. But beyond that, that wasn't my job. That really wasn't what I was supposed to be doing. I reached out to people on both sides of the aisle, to congressmen, to senators, to people in our communities. So it was right for me to be reaching out in terms of legal aid, but not politics.
Is your organization funded by government, or is it private donation? How does that work?
It is quite a mix. Our largest funder is the Federal Legal Services Corporation. That is a federal appropriation. the White House has proposed elimination of the Legal Services Corporation as one of their initiatives that they sent to Congress. That's a third of our funding from that one source. The second source is kind of an interesting one. It's called the Lawyers Trust Fund of Illinois. It's a combination of interest on lawyers' trust accounts. This is something that exists in all the states, including mm-hmm. Missouri. It's usually called IOLTA funding, interest on lawyers' trust accounts. If lawyers pool a lot of small amounts of money into one pool of money in a bank because they're small amounts. They're not enough that you would open a separate account for a client. To the extent interest is earned on that in Illinois, that then goes to Lawyers Trust Fund, and it's used to help fund legal services.
Any state financial assistance?
Well, on and off.
Mostly off for the last couple of years.
Mostly off for the last couple of years. We have had an appropriation for legal aid in Illinois. We did not have one the past 2 years. So there would be some chunks of money that were state-related. For example, we had money from the Illinois Attorney General. She had some funding that she was able to direct to us to help use for defending foreclosures. So.
Well, how much of an impact did that have during those couple of years on your operation?
Well, it could have had a huge impact. One reason it did not have so much is that private attorneys came forward during that period of time, as they have in the past, and contributed really significant amounts of money to Land of Lincoln to be able to stabilize our services, continue our services.
Well, that is also good news. I have to take a break. We're talking with Lois Wood, the retired executive director of the Land of Lincoln Legal Assistance Foundation. She left the job on July 31st, but is still active with the organization during the transition. We'll be back to continue our conversation. And if you would like to be a part of it, perhaps Mrs. Wood has touched your life in some way. We'd love to hear from you. Give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org, or if you would prefer, send us a tweet at STL On Air. This is St. Louis On the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our conversation with Lois Wood. I wanted to ask you about health care as an issue, Lois, in which you say you're very interested. How much has this debate and the disruption over the whole Obamacare thing impacted the poor people that you service?
The initial impact was an extremely positive impact. One thing that has always been distressing over the years is to see people with no access to health care except the emergency room. And that's not very good access if you've got a chronic condition. Unless you were disabled or had children, an adult who was impoverished in Illinois really didn't have access to any health care other than that. So it was a huge relief, I think, for all of us at Legal Aid and in the social service network to finally be able to direct people to the right place to be able to get their health needs met. If you were representing someone in a foreclosure or in a domestic violence case and you knew they were suffering from a health condition that they couldn't get help for, you knew you were helping them, but their life really needed something else to be better. The debate of whether Medicaid will continue, in what form, whether, you know, the Affordable Care Act will continue, in what form, has a lot of people very frightened. A lot of people in the low-income community know how bad it was before to not be able to get health care. It has people frightened because rural hospitals are at risk. If rural hospitals can't get reimbursed for serving people, they may not survive, and then the nearest hospital is a long ways away. So right now, I think people are very anxious about this.
You must be looking askance at what's going on in Washington these days. You say you may get involved in with some candidates, but you talk about the potential loss of funding that your former organization faces, talk about health care being uncertain, and there are other issues, too, that certainly are going to be impacted by the current administration. Your thoughts?
That's right. And on those kinds of things, we as a legal aid organization can have no impact. All we can do is be strategic about what we do for people. If it turns out that there's a loss of health care access, we will try to figure out ways that we can be out there advocating, not to change the law, because we're not allowed to advocate in any way for law changes, but to keep the legislators aware of what we're seeing as this progresses.
A lobbying group with some clout, given the legal background.
Right. We cannot lobby at all, but we can provide information at the request of legislators as to what's the impact of this particular policy or proposed policy.
You can advocate.
We can advocate, and we can inform.
On the subject of health care, we have a caller from Trenton, Illinois, who wants to get into that part of the discussion. So let's bring in Kay from Trenton. Go ahead, Kay. You're on the air.
Yes. I would like to ask Mrs. Wood, what do you think of a single-payer system for our country?
It seems, from my limited knowledge, that the single-payer system is the way to go, the most affordable way to go, that doesn't divert funding off so much to insurance companies. Certainly, I think we agree for the most part as a nation that Medicare has been a good thing. And an expansion of Medicare to a younger population seems logical to me.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you for the call. I have in my notes here some of the other things that the organization has worked on, one of which is farm law, which most of us who are not farmers probably don't know much about. Right. What kinds of issues are we talking about here?
We are not, as an organization, as active in farm law as we were back in the 80s. But during the 80s, if you recall, interest rates had gone sky high.
Oh, yeah.
And many younger farmers particularly, but it affected people who had been farming for years, were at risk of losing their farms. In many instances, they had borrowed more than they could now afford to pay. The federal government had a way of helping those people, especially if people had borrowed through the Farmers Home Administration. It's no longer called that. It's now the Farm Service Agency. The Farmers Home Administration was directed and authorized to work with those farmers to work out those debts so that people could continue to farm. But for a number of years, they were very stubborn about refusing to use their power, and they went ahead and were foreclosing on farmers. Mm-hmm. I became involved at that time. We happened to have a grant to do some farm law advocacy. I grew up on a farm. I had helped farm for a while, so it was an issue that felt very important to me. So when we started doing that work, I had been the directing attorney of the East St. Louis office for quite a long time at that point. I stepped down for 1 year from that so that I could put most of my energy into helping farmers. And I am still involved on my own time with some of that farm advocacy work.
You know, you go back to, I guess, either the latter days of the Nixon administration or the Ford administration. In terms of government support for what you do, what's the trajectory been like? I mean, has it been, in terms of financial support and other support, has it been on the rise over those 43 years and maybe leveling off now or even dipping a little bit? Or has it been erratic?
It's been erratic if we're talking about the federal part of it, that one-third of our funding that's federal. The last bill that President Nixon signed before his resignation was the creation of the Legal Services Corporation, which just shows what a nonpartisan issue this has been over the years. We expanded all over the country, legal aid programs did during those first 5 or 6 years after that bill was signed. In Illinois. I think our part of the state, our 65 counties, we ended up opening about 10 offices. Mm-hmm. However, when President Reagan was elected, his goal, like the current president's, was to eliminate the Legal Services Corporation and eliminate any federal funding for legal aid. So at that point, we survived, as we have survived since various times, but our funding was cut by 25%, and part of our funding was directed from beyond the staff program. So that was the first big downturn. Then the funding gradually rose again over the years, but then when the Gingrich Congress came into being, again, the goal of that part of the Republican Party was to eliminate the Legal Services Corporation. And again, our funding was cut by, I believe, about 25% that time. Fortunately, that was the wake-up call, I think, to most of us around the country of it's good to have Legal Services Corporation funding, but it's time to start looking elsewhere for funding. And the elsewhere, like Lawyers Trust Fund and private bar donations, has helped us sort of level up the ups and downs of the federal funding. But if you'd look at what we are getting today in federal funding from the Legal Services Corporation, the dollar amount is more than back in 1974. But in 1974 dollars, it's actually much less.
But
money.
Clearly very much subject to the political whims of, you know, and majorities and minorities in Congress, for instance, or in the White House itself.
Very much so, although we have over the years had a lot of bipartisan support and continue to enjoy bipartisan support, which has helped keep us alive even during those periods of time when there's been a proposal to eliminate our work.
What kind of money does it take to run an operation like that?
It's pretty expensive because you're hiring lawyers, and even though you're hiring lawyers who are not making a whole lot of money, they have to make something. A lot of them have debt. Mm-hmm. Right now, it's right around $8 million a year that we are spending on legal aid in those 65 counties.
You mentioned private attorneys. Are they doing pro bono work, or are they paid as well?
We have a mix. We have probably 700-800 attorneys throughout our area who do pro bono work. In addition to those who will do work absolutely for free for the clients that we send to them, in the areas that are most remote from our service offices, you know, some people live very far from one of our service offices, there's a very loyal panel of attorneys who will do cases for us at less than half of the going rate. And they're a huge help because for us to drive 2 hours to a courthouse and back is using up too much time if there's a local attorney who will do it. And then there are many, many attorneys who, in addition to taking pro bono cases, also contribute money to support our work.
You mentioned that your attorneys have debt. I'm sure many of them are young. And I also note that one of the issues that you deal with in the organization is student debt. How do those cases come to you from people who are essentially poor?
Lots of people incur debt over the course of their lives. A younger person may spend a couple years at a community college, may try an online course, even get a four-year degree or some advanced degree, then their health declines or for whatever reason they're not able to work. They can still be burdened with that debt forever. So we frequently see people who are disabled, who need to be relieved of that debt. But it's a tough fight to get that done. It's a very tough fight to get those debts released.
Let me make a statement and see what your reaction is as our time winds down. I say that poor people get the short end of the stick, not only with what you do, but basically in everything that they do. Is that correct?
I agree with that the resources that should be there in a country as prosperous as ours to help people with their most basic life needs, that money should be there, and very often it's not there. And it could be. That could be something this country could provide for the most vulnerable of its citizens.
Well, I have a sense, I think, of where some of your advocacy is going to go now that you've got a little more time on your hands. Lois Wood, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Congratulations on a wonderful career, and I hope you have an equally wonderful retirement.
Thank you so much.
But keep busy. You don't want to stop altogether.
I'll be busy.
Good. That's Lois Wood, the now retired director of the Land of Lincoln Legal Assistance Foundation in East St. Louis. Thank you so much for being with us. Coming up, remembering a giant in journalism, Richard Dudman. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.